Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer günstig und natürlich mit dem Aldi-Tiefpreisversprechen. Zum Beispiel knackiges Gemüse, saftiges Obst, frische Backwaren. Kurz gesagt, mehr Frische für alle. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote zum Tiefpreis in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Eitan Peetz. First I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Eitan Peetz was born on October 9, 1972, and lived in New York City. He was raised by his father Stan, who was a photographer, and his mother Julie, who was a child care worker. Eitan had an older sister and a younger brother. The family lived in an apartment at 113 Prince Street, in the Soho neighborhood of Lower Manhattan. In May of 1979, 6-year-old Eitan was in the first grade. His bus stop was 2 blocks away from his apartment at West Broadway and Prince Street. He was looking for just a little bit of freedom and asked his mother, Julie, if he could walk the 2 blocks to the school bus stop by himself. She decided to grant him permission. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On May 25, 1979, Eitan Peetz was supposed to walk to the bus stop by himself for the first time. He left the family apartment building at about 7:55 a.m. Eitan intended on buying a soda at the bodega between his apartment and the bus stop, so he could drink it during his lunch at school. The plan was for a neighbor to bring Eitan back to the apartment from the bus stop at 3:30 p.m. Eitan failed to arrive home as planned. Julie called the neighbor, who told her that Eitan did not show up for school that day. As it turns out, none of the parents at the bus stop remember seeing him there, so he didn't even make it to the bus stop in the morning. Julie called her husband, then called the police. A massive search was initiated. The police searched buildings, basements, alleys, elevator shafts, rooftops, dumpsters, every place they could possibly think of where Eitan could be. They didn't find Eitan or any evidence connected to him. The story of the disappearance was widely covered by the media. Eitan was one of the first children to be featured on a milk carton. Despite all the attention on this case, he was never found. 2 months later, in July 1979, the police interviewed employees at the bodega next to Eitan's school bus stop. One of those employees was an 18-year-old man named Pedro Hernandez. Years later, Pedro would become the focus of the investigation, but at this time, he was not considered a suspect. Pedro moved on with his life, and the police pursued other leads. He ended up in New Jersey, where he worked construction for a while before being injured. Almost 3 years later, in March 1982, a man named Jose Ramos was arrested after trying to lure 2 boys into a drainpipe. Jose had been the boyfriend of Eitan's babysitter. A search of his property revealed a number of photographs of boys. One looked a lot like Eitan. In 1987, Jose was convicted of charges unrelated to Eitan's disappearance. He was still considered a suspect in the case. In 1988, the son of Eitan's babysitter accused Jose of terrible offenses against him. In 1990, Jose was convicted in another unrelated case. During an interview with the FBI in 1991, he admitted to committing terrible offenses against a victim on the same day that Eitan disappeared. He said he put the victim on a subway train, so no one was murdered. There were no other disappearances or attacks reported on the day that Eitan went missing. This made it seem like Jose was referring to Eitan. Despite this, no charges were filed against Jose in connection with Eitan's disappearance. The case went cold. In 2012, the police started focusing on a man named Othniel Miller. He was a carpenter who had a basement workshop located between Eitan's apartment and the school bus stop. The night before Eitan disappeared, Othniel spent 45 minutes alone with him in the workshop. In April 2012, a scent dog was brought into the basement workshop by law enforcement and alerted to the odor of human decomposition. When Othniel was confronted with this, he said, "What if the body was moved?" This was a pretty suspicious thing to say, but he was never charged in connection with Eitan's disappearance. The media extensively covered the investigation into Othniel Miller. One person who was paying close attention to the news was a man named Jose Lopez. He was the brother-in-law of Pedro Hernandez. Again, Pedro had worked in a bodega between Eitan's apartment and the school bus stop. Jose contacted the police and told them that Pedro may have been responsible for Eitan's disappearance. On May 23, 2012, the police picked Pedro up at his house at 116 East Linwood Avenue in Maple Shade, New Jersey. At this time, Pedro lived with his second wife and was unemployed. Officers told him that his name came up in an old case. They wanted to speak to him about it. Pedro agreed and was transported to the Camden County Prosecutor's Office in a police cruiser. The interrogation started at about 8:10 a.m. In an unusual move, the police decided not to video record the interview at this time, even though there was a video camera installed in the interview room. After the police had Pedro's first wife walk by the room as part of a manipulation tactic, Pedro asked if this was about child support. The police told him it was about the case of a missing child. They proceeded to ask him questions about Eitan Pates. At around 1 p.m., Pedro told the police that he had told them everything. He wanted to go home, and they were holding him against his will. The police continued to question him after telling him he was there voluntarily. The officers who had been interviewing him left the room, and another officer came in. This officer changed the topic of the interview to Pedro's father. He suggested to Pedro that there was a cycle of mistreatment in Pedro's family. If his father mistreated him, that may have caused Pedro to mistreat others. Essentially, the officer was trying to manipulate Pedro to give him a way to explain why he may have done terrible things to Eitan. By this logic, Pedro would not have to feel as badly about what he did because he was not totally to blame. Instead, harmful family dynamics were responsible. This way of thinking could facilitate a confession. Pedro was very upset by this line of questioning. He cried and moved to the floor, where he adopted the fetal position and started to shake. He told the officer that he just wanted to go home and accused him of trying to trick him. So this was his second request to leave. Other officers entered the room and asked Pedro if he had any information about what happened in 1979. For the third time, Pedro said he wanted to go home. The police told him they had just a few more questions, and after that, he could leave. Pedro was informed that the police had spoken to many people from his past. At this point, Pedro said he did it. He had seen Eitan standing outside the bodega at the school bus stop and asked him if he wanted a soda. He choked Eitan and put his body in a garbage bag. Pedro probably meant strangled, not choked. After this, Pedro placed the bag in a box and left it in a trash area around the corner from the bodega. He said, "Something just took over me," but supplied no other motive for the crime. The police had never supplied Pedro with Miranda warnings. They were worried his confession would not be admissible. They read him his rights, started video recording the interrogation, and asked him to tell them exactly what he had told them before about what happened. Pedro once again confessed. He was transported to the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. There he confessed again, but some of the details were inconsistent with his other confessions. After this confession, Pedro said, quote, "Now, when you read me my rights, you said that if I need an attorney, does that mean when I was talking to you, that if I didn't want to answer you?" Unquote. It seemed pretty clear that Pedro did not understand his Miranda rights. Pedro Hernandez was arrested and charged with intentional murder in the second degree, felony murder, and kidnapping. Before his trial, Pedro was treated by multiple mental health clinicians in secure facilities. He was diagnosed with schizotypal personality disorder. This disorder has symptoms like magical thinking, paranoia, unusual beliefs, odd or eccentric behavior, limited emotional expression, and social anxiety. This disorder does not feature psychosis. However, at other times, Pedro was diagnosed with schizophrenia, which does involve psychosis. It sounds like the mental health clinicians could not agree on a diagnosis for Pedro. In January 2015, Pedro Hernandez went on trial for the murder of Eitan Peetz. After 18 days of deliberation, members of the jury said they were unable to reach a verdict. A mistrial was declared. Pedro went on trial for the second time in September 2016. The jury started deliberating in February 2017. They sent a note to the judge containing a question about Pedro's first confession, the one he made before hearing his Miranda rights. The jury wanted to know that if they found that confession was not voluntary, did they have to disregard later confessions? The judge wrote back, "The answer is no." 7 days later, on February 14, 2017, the jury found Pedro Hernandez not guilty of intentional murder in second degree, but guilty of felony murder and kidnapping. Pedro was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 25 years. On July 21, 2025, Pedro's convictions were overturned by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. They ruled that the answer the judge supplied to the jury's question was clearly wrong. Pedro must be either set free or tried again for the murder of Eitan Peetz. Now moving to my analysis. Pedro Hernandez maintains his innocence, and he has a substantial number of supporters. They view his conviction as nothing short of incompetence on the part of investigators and prosecutors. They can't believe that the state would prosecute a case with such weak evidence. The state, of course, disagrees. They argue that Pedro confessed multiple times. The confessions may not have matched, and he was mentally ill, but somehow they believe Pedro must have been telling the truth. This brings me to the question, was Pedro guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Years before Pedro Hernandez was a suspect, he allegedly told people that he attacked a child in New York City. He mentioned this in 1980 at a church retreat, and in the early 1980s to a neighbor and to a woman named Daisy, who he would later marry. In 2012, Pedro confessed multiple times to law enforcement. He said that he had murdered Eitan Peetz. Pedro's first wife, Daisy, described him as possessive, violent, disrespectful, and judgmental. At one point, she obtained an order of protection against him. Pedro's second wife, Rosemary, accused Pedro of using cocaine and said that he wrapped a vacuum cleaner cord around her neck. Now moving to the exculpatory factors. Even though Pedro had been accused of various offenses, he had no criminal record. No physical evidence whatsoever connected him to Eitan's murder. No DNA, no fingerprints, no fibers, nothing at all. The case against Pedro was completely based on his confessions. There were no witnesses to Eitan's murder. Nobody saw Pedro with them on the morning of the disappearance. It is true that Pedro mentioned on three occasions that he had killed someone in New York City, but all three of his stories were different. At the church retreat, he said that he attacked a child in the basement of his workplace and stabbed him with a pointy stick. Pedro told his neighbor that he strangled a black child and placed his body in a rolled-up rug. And he told Daisy that he strangled a teenager. Pedro's various confessions to law enforcement and to mental health clinicians were inconsistent. For example, in one confession, he said that other people were in the basement with him when he murdered Eitan. Some of these people were wearing nightgowns. In another confession, Pedro said that he never saw the face of his murder victim, yet he somehow recognized Eitan's photograph as that victim. Pedro said that he lured Eitan from the school bus stop. However, Eitan never made it to the bus stop. Pedro claimed that he committed the murder in the basement of his workplace, but that basement was locked, and no one had access to it except for the owner of the bodega. There is no question that Pedro's confessions to law enforcement were not voluntary. Again, at one point, the police told him that he could leave after they interviewed him some more. So, put another way, he couldn't leave until they were done. Pedro had an extensive history of mental illness. He had been diagnosed with disorders like schizophrenia, schizotypal personality disorder, bipolar disorder, and psychotic disorder. His memory was described as poor. Pedro was administered intelligence tests at various times in his life. The range of his IQ scores was 67 to 76. As a point of reference, an IQ score of 70 is 2 standard deviations below the mean. So a person with this score is in the bottom 2%. There were other good potential suspects in the case of Eitan's disappearance, including Jose Ramos and Off Neil Miller. In 2004, Eitan's parents were awarded $2 million in a civil suit against Jose Ramos, although they dismissed it later when Pedro was arrested. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Pedro Hernandez was guilty of murder? In my opinion, no, he was not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. There is no way to know if Pedro is guilty in reality or not. The only meaningful evidence against him are his confessions, and those are not reliable. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. The disappearance of Eitan Peitz was a high-profile case which frustrated the law enforcement. When they received the tip about Pedro Hernandez, they decided to manipulate him into giving a confession. They knew that he was mentally ill and that he had a low IQ score, so he was an easy target. The interview room was equipped with a video camera, but the police did not turn it on until after Pedro confessed. It is frowned upon for law enforcement to intentionally obtain a confession without giving Miranda warnings, only to administer the warnings later and asking the suspect to repeat the confession. The officers knew they were potentially violating Pedro's constitutional rights, but they were desperate to close the case. Now moving to my final thoughts. This case offers yet another example of how the police use deception in order to extract confessions. Here we see that officers held Pedro against his will while telling him that he was there voluntarily. They lied right to his face. This is the verbal equivalent of holding Pedro's hand and smacking his head with it and saying, "Why are you hitting yourself?" There are no consequences for the officers, yet Pedro has spent 13 years in custody. As far as why Pedro confessed, he could have confessed because he actually committed the murder. Maybe he confessed due to his mental health symptoms, or perhaps he just wanted to get out of New Jersey. Is Pedro guilty? There's no way to know, but the police certainly didn't care, one way or the other. Those are my thoughts in the case of Eitan Peitz. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.